Live from the capital of Raider Nation, Las Vegas, Nevada. It's Silver and Black Today, your daily dose of all things Las Vegas Raiders football. News, views, guests, and your phone calls are all part of the game plan. There's only one nation, and it listens here. Now your host, Scott Gulbranson.
Welcome back on a Wednesday, Silver and Black Today, powered by Sam and Ash Injury Attorneys. Visit them at samandash.com. Also, breaking news. You ready for this, Q?
Yep.
Big, big news. The post-game or pregame and post-game shows. Remember we had that little snafu last weekend? People were like, I can't hear it on your station because it was blacked out. They've changed that. Thanks to our great program director here, Kyle Engelhart, and the Raiders. You are now going to be able to stream the pregame and postgame right here on Raider Nation Radio 920, which includes the app, which you can find at lvsportsnetwork.com. But also, you can find inside the Raiders app. It still blows me away that I can open the Raiders app, and all those Raider fans all over the country can open the app, and like we are the like third thing at the top of the page.
Right, exactly. That's pretty cool.
Yes, it's very cool. So just so, again, when you want to listen to the game on Monday night, by the way, our show Monday will be an hour shorter because of the pregame, but the pregame right after us will go from 2 to 3, and then from 3 to 5 right here on Raider Nation Radio, you'll have the pregame show coming up on Monday. So you can listen to it all in one place now. You don't have to skip around apps, none of that stuff. You get to take Q and I with you in your pocket. And now you get Brent, Lincoln, and all and JT, all those guys in your pocket.
Are we going to do the show live from the stadium on Monday?
No. COVID. All right. Can't do it. Can't do it.
I just thought I'd throw it out there.
I would love it. I would love it. But no, we can't do it, unfortunately. But we will get there. It's coming. Keep wearing your mask so we can go do our show there. All right. We're going to go back on the phone lines real quick. Tom, you've been waiting patiently. Tom, you're on with Q and Scott here on Silver and Black Today.
Hey, guys. How you doing this evening?
I am awesome, man. How about you?
You may know me by another name, T3 Raider Fact.
Okay, man. Cool. Good to hear from you.
Hey, good checking in with you guys. Hey, listen, I'm sure you probably talked about this before ad nauseum, but one of the things that really brought to my attention during the course of the game was the lack of whistles. And I don't know whether it was the referees just swallowing the whistle to let them play or whether they were afraid to make calls, but I know that had at least a little bit of an impact on the Raiders-Panthers games. But I know it had dramatic impact on other games throughout the league as well.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, the officiating, which, of course, is always seems to be an issue. And by the way, we're going to have our friend Ethical Skeptic, who did a whole project on the Raiders, showing and proving in his mind that the Raiders actually do get more penalties and that there is a bias against them. We'll have him on here very soon. But yeah, no, I mean, Q, I noticed it in all the NFL games. Of course, you had the call in the Rams game against the Cowboys, which I'm sure you've heard plenty about down there in Central Texas. But overall, though, I think the referees, again, they didn't have preseason either. They didn't do their camp. Overall, though, I think there's been a couple bad calls, but there's always a couple bad calls. But in the Raider game, with the exception of the hit against Henry Ruggs, which was helmet to helmet and they didn't call, I thought it was called a pretty good game.
I do too. And I got to give a lot of credit to the Raiders. I think they played a really clean game.
Yes.
That was what's most importantly, because a lot of times they get real grabby, similar to what happened when Damon Arnette got beat. He reached to go grab. A lot of times, and that was a knock on him. That was one knock on him coming out of college, that he's real grabby. He's going to get a lot of holding penalties. Well, he had a clean game outside of that one play. Yeah, that helmet-to-helmet hit I didn't agree with. That wasn't called on Henry Ruggs. And, of course, the non-holding penalty against Max Crosby that he was clearly held right in front of the official and they didn't say anything. So maybe they were just trying to round themselves into game shape themselves and they like swallowed the whistle like they said, but who knows?
Yeah, and it's, again, though, I think that you've seen some of those plays around the league. But, you know, look, there's going to be blown calls all the time because it's human beings. It just happens. But in the Raider, yeah, to watch a clean Raider game, especially for the Raiders, was a very good sign to me because, you know, discipline, pre-snap stuff, all that stuff just seemed to be really well. And I think offensively, now I'm talking about false start calls and all that, I really credit Derek Carr, what he did during that offseason, getting those guys together at the park and doing all that work. I think that's what you're seeing. They had a little bit of a head start, Q.
Yeah, a little bit. You know, I think that has something to do with it. Yeah, no, it did. It has something to do with it.
I don't believe you are on that side with me.
No, I am.
Okay.
I think it had a little something to do with it. I think it was more important than what I thought it was when I first heard that they were doing it.
Ah, okay.
I thought it was something that all the teams were doing, which is usually what they do.
Yeah.
But I think it did play a major role because there are so many young players on this team. So yeah, I'm giving you credit on that one.
You better take it while
I can give it to you.
That's okay. I don't need credit.
I gotta take it back.
Remember, we're humble on the show. We don't have to get credit. We're all good. We're just living the dream. That's all we're doing.
Gotcha.
Speaking of living the dream, we are now going to bring in our next guest, someone who our listeners are familiar with. And if you're in Las Vegas or you are a Raider fan, over the course of the last 3 years, as the stadium has gone up and has been built and everything that's gone around it, Mick Akers from the Las Vegas Review Journal joins us, and he's been covering it since the beginning. And Mick, we wanted to bring you on today because we've been seeing all these pictures of the Raider Image Store opening at Allegiant Stadium, and we know you were there as well as your colleagues from the Las Vegas Review Journal. People would say, "Well, why are you talking about a store?" Well, this Raider Image Store is pretty spectacular. Talk a little bit about the fact that they opened today to the public, right?
Yeah, they opened today at 11 a.m. So, 7 days a week, 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. Except for home game days, they won't be open. Obviously, they discouraging fans from, coming to the stadium when they're playing in there this year. So, open today. A lot of people were excited and kind of caught a lot of people off guard because people were kind of waiting, and all of a sudden the announcement came, "Hey, we're opening tomorrow." So, nice little surprise there for, people in town. Obviously, they have, other locations at malls around the city, and those are all nice and all, but, this one just kind of takes it to the next level.
Yeah, they have
mix.
Go ahead, Q.
Well, speaking of the next level, was there something that just stood out to you and caught your eye? I mean, I saw a lot of pictures, but was there something that you saw and thought, "Wow, that's pretty cool"?
Oh yeah, right when you walk in the doors, they have like a little lobby, right before the two doorways before you get in. It had Las Vegas Raiders on the wall. It kind of sets the tone, saying, "Hey, this is Las Vegas Raiders." Like, so when you walk in, "Hey, this is the Las Vegas Raiders home here." It's the flagship store, obviously. So right when you walk in, you hit with this giant Raiders logo without the pirate shield inside, so you can kind of step in and take your own photos and kind of become the Raiders logo. Then right after that, they have these three animatronic figures running in place with footballs in Raiders uniform, so that's pretty cool, just kind of seeing that, kind of shows the extra touches they had in there.
Yeah, and those, again, we're talking to Mick Akers from the Las Vegas Review Journal about the opening of the Raider Image Store at Allegiant Stadium. Yeah, the automatronic guys, I'm expecting them to ask if we know where Sarah Connor is, but if you don't know that movie reference, then you don't know. Anyway, but Mick, the stuff inside there, like I saw, they have some real high-end merchandise. They have kind of the normal stuff that you and I would think about, sweatshirts and all that. But when you look at what the audience is there, of course, game day is one thing, but the fact that they're going to be open there too. They're right off the strip this weekend, especially with the game coming up on Monday night and fans unable to go. How are they handling folks getting, is there a limit on the number of people can go? And of course you got to wear your mask because that's a state thing, but are they limiting? Because I there's a lot of people coming in town, and I think they're going to get swamped more probably than they realize.
Yeah, so they have the outside security gates, so that's where you have to enter before you even get to the main doors of the entrance on the north end of the stadium. So they're limiting it to 75 people at a time. Mm-hmm. It's 18,500 square feet, so obviously easy to social distance with just 75 people in there. So social distancing, they have hand sanitizing stations throughout the whole store. They recommend people do that regularly while they're inside there. And then masks, of course, and if they don't have a mask, they have some for sale there. So the Raiders ones, obviously, they're a big seller, they said yesterday. So, they're fully cooperating with all the COVID regulations, and, they just want to have the store open and, keep everyone safe and happy inside.
Yeah, and Mick, with the store too, clearly, like, there's the plaza outside. So we've also seen a lot of pictures from you, and I even tweeted, "Where was Jamarcus Russell's brick?" And you didn't respond, but which means I'm assuming you didn't find it. Just kidding. But that whole plaza area too, even with the COVID restrictions and whatnot, for those folks that are coming into town, that is it's not going to be open on game day, but the other days of the week, people can roll around there and find their brick and find the players' bricks too. Correct. Right?
Yeah, so that's assuming where the line's going to be to get in. So, if there's 75 people, you're going to have to wait. So as far as I know, you'll be able to do that when you're walking in between the security gate, and then when you get inside, I'm sure they're not going to let people, you know, linger too much out there because they want to get people in and out and let everyone get in. But yeah, so it's right there when you're walking right into the door. So they have this kind of split up with, you know, the ones people bought in the middle, and then they have some of the Raiders players ones kind of on the side with plenty of room to add more, you know, as the, you know, time goes on and, you know, more and more former Raiders come about. But yeah, they said that there's supposed to be, you know, every Raider there. I kind of looked around and I found some odd ones like Dante Culpepper. Some people were kind of surprised when I put that one on Twitter. And I, you know, found some of the legends like Tim Brown and Marcus Allen. So, you know, they have them all. I didn't go and look for them. Obviously, people were asking about a few players like Jamarcus Russell and stuff. But, you know, I didn't have that much time as well because we were in a time crunch as well. But, yeah, so they're supposed to have them all. So, you know, if you want to go and try to find the most odd one, I'm sure that's a fun game you can play when you go down there.
Scott mentioned earlier that they have some high-end stuff there, and I saw that picture of that helmet, that I guess a crystal helmet or whatever, looked like it was about $7,000. How amazing is that in person?
Yeah, that was something to see. That was even the smaller one. They have a different one that's actually worth $12,000. So, you know, if you're feeling more of a baller that day, you know, maybe take the next step up. But, yeah, they had a few things, you know, with the Swarovski's crystals on them. They had a purse, a couple purses and stuff. So they had that all in a nice little, you know, display there. And the other $12,000 one was located above Al Davis' jacket that they have on display there in the store.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Ooh, again, we're talking.
How did that look?
It was cool. It's like nice, you know, original white with the original Raiders logo on it. It's, you know, super clean and, you know, just plain, obviously. So, you know, nothing too much to it, but it's just that. Same as the, you know, the Raiders uniform, you know, they're pretty simple, but, you know, they're the classics.
Yeah, and again, we're talking to Mick Akers from the Las Vegas Review-Journal about the opening of the Raider Image Store over at Allegiant Stadium, which is now, as of today, at 11 a.m. and open till 7 p.m. 7 days a week, except for game days. It is open to the public. And Mick, the one thing, too, is with all the fans, there's a lot of fans. We keep hearing from them in social. I'm sure you're seeing it, too, who are saying, you know, we can't go to the game, but we're coming to Vegas for the game. You cover infrastructure. You cover a lot of these issues related to events and things that happen around town as well. Of course, we heard just before we went on the air today, the Killers are going to be doing their show on the roof of Caesar's Palace. What have you talked to law enforcement officials and the Raiders about what they're expecting for crowds around the resort corridor and what's going to be allowed and what might not be allowed?
Yeah, nothing yet. I've made some calls and, you know, waiting on some, you know, returns on those. Supposed to maybe get some info later today from the Raiders about, you know, what they expect and, you know, and what they might allow at the stadium, which I'm assuming not much because even last Sunday they closed the parking lot off just, you know, expecting people to show up for the first Raiders game, even though it wasn't at the Allegiant Stadium. So, you know, it seems like I'm just going to go out there on a limb and say they don't want people to show up at the stadium, you know, especially with the players inside and such. But, yeah, I've seen people saying, hey, I'm coming down, I'm going. People are saying, hey, we're going to the stadium. So, obviously, it seems like that people are going to show up. There is, you know, those areas around, you know, some of those businesses where people can park and walk over. But I would imagine some beefed up security and such. But I'm still waiting to hear any kind of official word on that.
So, Mick, I heard you're the guy around town that's got the official down low of where people are going to be gathering. You got the details?
I've heard a lot of, you know, people just kind of mentioning different sports bars around and all that. I know, you know, all the sponsorship team, you know, with the Caesars and MGM, all those properties are going to probably have a good mix of them. I saw a commercial today showing, you know, a bunch of, you know, Raiders, not just Raider fans, but NFL fans saying, hey, we welcome the road team here. But obviously it's going to be a lot of the Raiders fans. So, you know, it looks like they're already even advertising towards, you know, they know that people are going to come down for, you know, NFL games, even though, you know, there's no fans allowed in the stadium this season. So it appears that these resorts and, you know, the areas around the strip are kind of ready to, you know, to handle, you know, influx of fans here, especially after last week's trial run with some of those sports books getting, you know, 50% capacity and such. Everyone kept it within regulations, you know, which will keep them open. So hopefully, you know, that keeps going forward.
Well, and I keep telling people, Mick, part of the problem, like for those folks that are outside of Las Vegas, that our bars are kind of open, but they're not open. You know, like one of the big Raider bars, of course, is the Stage Door Casino, and they can't open yet. But we've been hearing rumblings, and we've heard these in weeks past, and nothing's happened, that the governor might end up going to the next phase. It would be nice if he did that before Monday night, but I haven't heard that either. And I'm just wondering, I'm wondering if officials here in town, including the Raiders, if they're underestimating the amount of people that are planning to come, and if they do come and show up in massive numbers, what they're going to do about it. Because, listen, Raider Nation is passionate. You know this. Q knows this. It's like when they come, they're coming. It's not like, oh, at the last minute they decide not to go. If they're saying they're coming, they're coming. And I'm just wondering if, and I know you said you're going to be covering that later, maybe today. I'm just wondering what's going to happen, man. I really am. And I'm excited to see people come to town. But at the same time, I just wonder how the local officials are going to be able to handle it.
Yeah, you know, I would assume that just going off past, they've handled large events here in town, you know, for decades here with the Strip and everything else that goes around here. I would assume that they're not going to underestimate it. I would assume they're going to, you know, be ready for anything. I would assume some Metro officers would be on site at the stadium just in case, obviously, with, you know, those players inside and, you know, they're, you know, high-priced guys. So, obviously, you don't want to, you know, have any kind of dangerous situation present itself or anything like that. But I would assume that they have some kind of plan in place where, you know, it will have X amount of people on site, and if it seems like it's getting out of hand, well, you know, they can easily send down reinforcements. Just, you know, going off the pass and everything, you know, Metro is, you know, well-trained in handling large events.
All right. Mick Akers from the Las Vegas Review-Journal has joined us. Make sure you follow him if you already don't. Most Raider fans do, but it's at Mick, M-I-C-K-A-K-E-R-S. Mick does great work at the RJ, not only covering all the stuff with the Raiders and the stadium, but also other things about our city. So, Mick, thank you so much, man, and we'll talk to you real soon.
Appreciate it.
All right. There you go. So you're not going to go buy the $12,000 helmet, Q?
No, I thought you were going to do that. You're the man with all the money, man.
No.
I told you, I'm broke. I told you that before we even talked to him.
Well, who are you talking to about me having money? Are you crazy? I got 5 kids, man.
Well,
they sap
how many think
money.
I got?
They you. I don't know.
Exactly.
You do have.
I don't know either.
That's what I would say. People always say,
out in the mail.
That's right. People say, how many kids do you have? And I say, 5 that I know of.
Right.
Right? I don't know. You know, when I was young, I had fun. What can I say? All right, we're going to step aside, take a break, and then when we come back, Q and his 14 kids are going to do the Q-tip. You're listening to Silver and Black Today here on Raider Nation Radio.
The autumn wind is a raider, and when it blows, it comes from the Las Vegas desert. Back to Silver and Black Today here on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
That's right. You're back. Silver and Black Today.
Feel me flow.
On Raider Nation Radio. That's right. We're back. Q Myers, Scocco Branson. Hold it down on a Wednesday. Yes, sir. By the way, the latest COVID tests from the NFL are in. Out of 40,479 tests for players, and 7,000 players, 40,000 for staff and everything like that. You've had 2 new confirmed positive tests among players and 5 for personnel. So 7 out of 40,000.
Not bad. That's a pretty good number.
That's a pretty good number. And I had to go, I got to take this a little TMI. You ready? I go to take my test today, and they're doing a new protocol where you do a regular test like they've always done on us, just a swab in the nose, no big deal. Then today they have to take a second test. And the girl says to me, okay, for this one, we need your nose to be a little more wet. And I said, like, you want me to, like, throw water on my nose? What do you want me to do? She's like, no, we need mucus.
Oh, so you had to blow your nose?
And she said, blow your nose, but don't wipe it. And I'm like, hell, that's what I used to do. I had kids running around with snotty noses. But anyway, and then she's taking a sample. Oh, I got a good sample here. I'm like, man, you guys don't get paid enough, number one. And number two, they do a fantastic job over there.
I don't know if I could date a woman that had that job.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm real comfortable with, you know, her having to deal with snot all day.
Yeah.
Well, and it's, you know, someone else's. That's weird.
If it was Josh Jacobs' snot, it'd be okay or no?
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's even worse.
Oh, yeah.
That's like, you know what I compare that to? It's almost like dating a woman after, like, Shaq has dated her.
Oh, don't go there, man.
You don't want to be that guy.
No, that's a whole different issue.
Well, I'm just saying, there's certain categories to life, and you've got to realize what lane you're in and what lane you're not.
Yeah, but what? Like my mom was,
and I know my lane.
But my mom was like a nurse, so my mom had to do stuff, you know.
Yeah, but she didn't sit there and look at and say, "Hey, I need your nose wet," and then, "Hey, I got a good sample." I mean, that's just
no. But she had to give to give people like sponge baths.
Well, that's cool. That's she's doing something good for people. That was positive.
The Shaq date thing just killed me, man. I don't know if I can
think
go
about
on.
It.
The show's over now. I can't go on. I thought
maybe
about
that should have been the Q-tip.
Yeah, I thought
don't
about it.
Don't date a woman after Shaq.
I thought about it. That's why I can't move on. I'm like, oh my gosh, all these visions in my head are really bad.
Well, that's your bad.
Oh, I know it is. Hey, what
I just said that because Shaq has a lot of money and I don't.
And he's got great. By the way, when you're here, his chicken restaurant, the best shakes I've ever had.
That's what I'm talking about. Oh, I can't do shakes.
No?
I'm lactose.
Oh, lactose.
Yeah. Yeah, bubble guts.
I didn't know that was different than lactose intolerant.
It's lactose. It's a thing. It's a real thing.
Is it really? What's different about it?
It happens to a black guy.
Okay, I gotcha. Wait, you're black?
Jeez. What? You are on the slow train, brother.
Oh, my gosh. I just keep going back to Shaq. All right, we're going to go on the phones real quick before we get to the Q-tip, which is not going to be about Shaq dating women. It is Raider Dave. Raider Dave, you're on with Q and Scott.
Yeah, don't be so sure. I bet Q likes the slow lane. That's not the one Shaq's driving in.
I do, actually. I do like the slow lane because I'm never in a hurry. I just like to drive and people could just look at me instead of be wondering, why is that guy going so fast?
A little Don Cornelius.
There you go.
There you go.
Attaboy.
Hey, guys, I went off on JT the Brick Show the other day because I looked at the Las Vegas Review-Journal on my phone because I can't get the paper here, or I guess I possibly could, whatever. And I know they've been a huge supporter of this team. Big old 50-page, you know, layout or whatever before the team, you know, start of the season. Mm-hmm. But Mark Davis bringing people over, building a stadium that is going to bring these guys a Super Bowl that they can cover for the Journal. Why on earth do they have still today the Chiefs over the Raiders in the standings? And Q will attest to this. It might be the only week that we could go ahead and put the Raiders over the Chiefs. But JT opened the paper and it showed them in third. And it's not points for, it's not point differential, and it's alphabetical. I just don't understand what's going on.
Well, it's alphabetical, you're right. But again, and it's a good question, we'll ask Vinny about it. Thanks again, Raider Dave. We'll ask Vinny about it when he comes on at the end of the show, because usually in hometowns, when you're in the lead, or if you're tied, unless there's a statistical reason, they will put their team first, right? But we're a new NFL town. It's like we just got the new car and we don't know how the windows roll down yet. So give us a few days. We'll get there. All right. Real quick, PE, you're on with Scott and Q.
It's my dude, North Carolina.
Hey, what's up? What's up, Scott? What's up, Q?
Tobacco Road. What's happening, brother?
All right, I'm doing good, man. Hey, Scott, I want to challenge you a little bit, right quick.
Awesome.
You keep saying that Andy Reid's offense and John Gruden's offense is not the same, but really, John Gruden is a disciple of Andy Reid, so their offense is the same, just like Doug Peterson and Sean McVay and all these other guys. But the only difference is John Gruden hasn't evolved his offense the way they have. Andy Reid, he evolved his offense to stretch it vertical instead of going sideways. And the same thing with Sean McVay and Doug Peterson. So why can't John Gruden do the same thing?
No, it's a good question. They come from the same coaching tree. That's absolutely true.
The tree is the same.
The tree is the same, but the offenses and how they run them are different. And you're right. I'm not saying that you're wrong about, that John Gruden's more traditional with how he runs the West Coast offense going back all the way. But at the same time, the way the personnel is built, the way they've built their teams is different. Now, the Chiefs finally, at least through one game, it's only one game, have a running back, right? They haven't had that dominant running back really since Kareem Hunt started to look like he was going to be a good player. But that's, to me, the difference is that those teams are built different and the play calling and what they do is different. So I'm not saying one's better than the other or that Andy Reid's wouldn't work with the Raiders if they had the right personnel, but John Gruden's the coach and he's going to call it the way he calls it, and he does not call it the same way as those guys do.
Right.
That's true. I agree with that. But you know, everything is about evolution. You can't do the same thing you were doing, you know, 20 years ago. You have to evolve at some point, especially if you want to get to the place that we all want to get to, which is to be a consistent playoff team and win a Super Bowl. So
yeah.
I think at some point his offense is going to have to grow in that area.
No, and I agree with you, PE, but I think it is. I think you'll see that as time goes on, because look, in the previous 2 years since his return from the TV booth, he hasn't had the guys to do anything close to what Andy Reid and the rest of the guys you're talking, Sean McVay, have been able to do and go vertical, right? And to spread it out more. Now he does. And in the first game, we saw, I thought we saw parts of that game plan that we wouldn't have seen 2 years ago.
No, I agree with that. I think that there was, the bubble screen action was there. You saw the end around action there. You saw trying to get the ball in Henry Ruggs' hand any way you can. I like the players that he has, and I like the fact that, you know, he's still staying dedicated and staying true to the run, because that's where it all starts. And once you get that run game going, especially with them big uglies up front, they want to run block. So if you let them get run blocking, then that opens up the play action pass, and that's when you're free to kind of take some more shots. I think it's going to continue to evolve, to PE's credit. It's not something that happens overnight. And they're not a finished product. This is one game into a 2020 season. It's going to take some work.
No, that was a really good call by PE. And PE, I love when you challenge us. Any way you can do that, man, is always good.
That's my homeboy.
That's always good. So thank you for the call. All right. It's that time. We're not swabbing noses. We're cleaning ears. It's time for the Q-tip.
I can't hear you, Peach.
It's time to listen up, Raider Nation.
Can't hear you, Peach.
Clear out those ears and get ready for the Q-tip. Your boy Q's daily take on what you need to hear.
That very precision seems to drive Q-tip fans right over the edge.
Like it or not.
This one's a really good one today. I'm like really excited about this one because it's more of a celebration with Raider Nation. You know, 2020's been a hell of a year for everybody. I think everyone's looking forward to the end of it, even though football season just started. So we don't want to go too fast. But I think everyone's looking towards like New Year's Day and saying, okay, good, we got past 2020, on to 2021. Well, that's what I'm saying when it comes to the Hall of Fame. We've already heard the great news about, Coach Flores, who's going to be in the booth, by the way, on a Monday night with Lincoln Kennedy and Brent Musburger. That's going to be great to hear. We already know he's going to be in the Hall of Fame this year. He's going to get put in. And then today the news came out about the 135 nominees that are, up for the Hall of Fame this year. And most importantly, obviously all 135 ain't getting in, but there's 14 first-year eligibles, in my opinion, led by one, Charles Woodson. So this is possibly going to be a 2021 class, and I think it's not even possibly. I think it's just going to happen, where you see C. Wood and Coach Tom Flores both go into the Hall of Fame at the same time. It will be a really, really good day for Raider Nation.
Absolutely. Good call, man. I knew you were going to go there with this one. I did, because I was watching NFL Network this morning at home, and they were doing some getting ready for the announcements, and they were interviewing Drew Pearson and some of the other guys, including Coach Flores. And so, yeah, it'll be great to see the Raiders that have been so underrepresented in recent classes, really, to go in. And there's still guys that need to go in.
Absolutely.
Clearly, we talk about them all the time, including Cliff Branch and others.
Right.
But at the same time, yeah, you're right. And Charles Woodson, a no doubter. I mean, hearing some of those guys that are voters talk about, it's like, yeah, he's one of those guys where you stand up and you say his name and everybody goes, yep.
Yeah. I mean, it's no doubt. He's one of those guys that you knew was going to get into the Hall of Fame the minute he wanted to. The minute he walked off the field, you're like, well, you might as well start fitting him for his gold jacket now.
That's right.
So, and he represents, and look, I know he had a great run with the Packers as well, but he represents the Raiders in a great way. And when the Hall of Fame put out their tweet, Charles Woodson was in the silver and black. He had the Raider helmet on, the Raider jersey. So,
yeah,
it's all good.
And there's no doubt in my mind he's going in as a Raider, of course.
Right.
And, of course, he had a Super Bowl win with the Packers, and that's great for him individually.
And he'll show that respect to the Packers because he always does.
He always does. He's one of those guys who's played for two storied franchises, and both fan bases love him, and both fan bases always feel respected. And that's because Charles Woodson's just a classy guy. I mean, there's no other way to put it. He just does everything the right way, and he wears ascots, which I also share with him, and I love that he's got some style.
All right, well, All right.
You don't rock one? You don't have one?
You lost me on the ascots, but it's okay.
Wait a minute. I got to send you one? I'm sending
you one. I'm not going to wear that.
Oh, you'll wear it. Come on, man.
I'm a Nike guy. Unless it's a Nike dry fit, I'm not wearing it.
A dry fit ascot. That would be kind of cool, man. I think we just stumbled onto a new Silver and Black Today swag line.
There you go.
We'll call it the Q-cot.
Careful there, brother. Especially after your Shaq conversation you've been having. Be careful with what you say.
I have no recollection of that. All right, we're going out on the phones, and we're going out to our man down in Los Angeles, Gangster Raider. What's going on today, buddy?
G-Money.
What's happening, y'all?
Chilling.
I'm just trying to reiterate. I'm telling you, 31 points. If we score 31 points this week against the New Orleans Saints, we win that game. Because I watched the game from the beginning to end that they had against Tampa Bay. And Drew Brees didn't look too good. I know it's the first game or whatever, but Michael Thomas is going to be there. And I think our defensive line, I think this is going to be the worst game that they had against the Panthers. I think this is going to be the worst game of the season. And this week is going to be, you're going to see much more improvement. And we gave up, 30 points? I think if we can cut that in half or give up no more than 18, if we give up no more than 18 New Orleans and we score 31 points, we should easily beat New Orleans Saints and Chris in our new black house in front of the whole world and make a statement to the NFL in glorious Raider Nation fashion. You know what I'm saying? So remember what I told you, 31 points. If we can average 31 points a game, we should make the playoffs. What do y'all think?
So,
what's up, Q?
What up, though?
He said... here's the deal, Gangster Raider. I think, absolutely, I think if they can hold the Saints under 20 points, then they should win the game. And 31 points, if that offense gets going, look, the Saints' defense is a lot better than Carolina's. It doesn't have four rookies starting. It has veterans up and down the line. They're good. Anybody's beatable in the NFL on any given Sunday, as they absolutely. Say, right? So I'm not putting that past. Now, 31 points a game as an average
is tough.
That's
it's
really
very
tough.
Difficult.
I'm not saying it can't happen, Gangster Raider, because they have talent. They have young talent. But with the schedule and all that stuff, look, I think the Raiders are going to score their points. I don't think the 34 points is the last time they will score in the mid-30s. I think they will. I think they're going to get better as the year goes on, as long as they stay healthy and they stay on track. But I do agree. If you can somehow keep the Saints to 14, 17 points and your offense is doing what it did last week, which is going to be tougher against the Saints, then you would win the game.
Right, of course. I mean, just math tells you that. But, I mean, and that's not being disrespectful. I'm just saying.
No, of course not.
It is what it is. I just think that holding the Saints to 18 points is going to be very difficult. Yeah. Remember what nobody's talking about when it comes to the Saints struggling to score? Tampa Bay has a really good defense, too.
Yeah.
Don't forget about that.
Yeah, it's easy to look at scores or stats and say, well, they're not very good. And it's like, no, sometimes you go up against. And I tweeted out this morning the Henry Ruggs pass, the long one at the beginning of the game against the Panthers.
Yep.
That we talked about a couple times here on the show, where I had people say, oh, he overthrew him or he underthrew him. Like, no, there was good coverage and the ball was actually perfectly thrown. There was just good coverage.
Right.
And when that happens, you don't say the quarterback did poorly or the receiver didn't keep running or whatever. It's just like sometimes you have a defense or offense in one case where they play well and they just execute really well and it made it difficult and you could not get the play to work for your side. And I think that's the case with the Saints last week. They had a couple things going against them. And that was, of course, number one was the good Tampa Bay defense. So we'll see how it all works out, man. I just really think that, 31 points a game, I'm not saying it can't happen, but, man, that's
just
tough.
A lot.
I mean, how many did Kansas City average last year?
That's what I'm trying to figure out right now.
I think it was 28,
feverishly working.
28 or 29 or something like that. I'm going to guess. And then same with Baltimore. Look at Baltimore. Baltimore put up 36 points last week, right? So those are teams that have a different style of quarterback for certain, and they kind of run their offense a little bit. So 34 points is a lot for, I think, and great for the Raider offense. I just think to expect over 30 every game, especially in the division when it gets tough, those rivalries, even when the teams are bad, they're always close games. It always seems like there's close games in the AFC
West. Yeah, I agree. The Chiefs scored 50 total touchdowns in 2019.
50 touchdowns. Season. 50 touchdowns. And
so that has nothing to do with field goals. I'm just saying that's just touchdowns.
But you start thinking about 31 points a game, man. I mean, listen, if they put 31 points, if Gangster Raider's right, then they will be the belle of the ball across the NFL because people love to see scoring, and they would have this city just completely enamored with them because that's exciting to watch. A team scoring 31 points a game is pretty remarkable. And I got to find out. I will research Gangster Raider for tomorrow's show to see how many times in the last 10 years a team has averaged over 30 or 31 or more points per game, because I don't think there's that many.
I can't believe for some reason, I can't find it, and I know I've always saw it. I used to talk about it all the time, and I just forgot what it was.
Because
the Raiders last year averaged, what, 24?
Correct.
Or 19. No, 19.
19,
and they gave up 26 a game.
So I'm looking it up now. People are like, this is great radio. You guys are typing into a computer.
I hate that.
But no, we'll find out. We'll find out. We're going to take a break when we come back. We'll have done our Google search, and we'll let you know. You're listening to Q. You're listening to Scott here on the Silver and Black today, brought to you by Sam and Ash, only on Raider Nation Radio.
Welcome back to Silver and Black today. Here's Scott Gulbranson and Q Myers.
All right, we're back. Getting ready to close out the show. Vinny Bonsignor coming up in a second here. Okay, Q. Number one scoring offense last year was Baltimore.
Yep.
31.9, so almost 32 points. Kansas City didn't quite hit 30, followed by San Francisco very close, Tampa Bay 28, New Orleans, 28, right? So to score 30, to average 31 points a game, that's a huge, huge task.
Yeah, exactly. And to PE's credit, remember, PE hit us up and said John Gruden's offense hasn't evolved yet to have big time numbers like that. He's absolutely right. Yeah. You know, he doesn't have that kind of firepower, I don't think, to do that consistently. You're going to get that game, you know, a few games here, a few games there, but you're not going to get that week in and week out, not in my opinion.
That's right. Well, we are joined, as we are every day, by Vinny Bonsignor, his show In the Huddle with Vinny and Lincoln Kennedy.
Hut hike.
Who is quite larger than you, stature wise.
He is definitely he's an NFL offensive tackle. Offensive tackle.
The thing about Lincoln,
they're built a little differently.
He is the nicest guy in the world, and so like you see somebody that big, and when you see the film of him playing and how good he was. And then you talk to him. He's like, "Hey, how you doing?"
Right. That's an offensive lineman
trait.
It is. They're very analytical, very smart, extremely smart. My favorite players to talk to have always been offensive linemen. It's just a fun conversation usually, but I mean they'll get after you. You have to be a violent player out there to deal with the Aaron Donalds of the world.
Yeah, it seems like they find their peace, though. As soon as they leave the field, they're like all calm and cerebral.
Funny thing, Les Snead one time told me, though, because if you look at offensive linemen now, a lot of them just drop the weight immediately.
Yes.
So Les Snead in his Alabama twang says, the skinny ones get fat and the fat ones get skinny. So if you look at the players, you know, like Joe Thomas, he dropped the weight.
How about, remember Nick Hartwig?
Yeah.
He did TV. Yeah. And like the first time I saw him after he stopped playing, I'm flipping channels. I'm like, God, what happened? Like half of you is gone.
Right. Whereas the running back, you know, gets the dad body real quick.
Yes.
Or the wide receiver gets the dad body real quick. So it's uncanny. And if you go look at Les Snead back at Auburn, he was a big old dude.
I will.
It's like you would not even imagine it looking at him now, that he actually played offensive line at Auburn University and was a big old dude. So
Vinny, speaking of offensive line, what's the latest with Trent Brown? We thinking he's going to get out there? Do we not know yet? I mean, the injury report, obviously not fully.
Yeah, we won't know until tomorrow what the deal is. And even at that point, I'm not sure we'll know exactly what the deal is. He's going to either show up on the injury report and be a limited or a out or a full participant, I guess. So we'll have to wait and see. But it's a big thing because they need him out there. When he's out there, they're just a better team. I mean, you know, that's the thing that's frustrating right now is that it's not just any old body that they're missing. It's the anchor of their offensive line. It's the best player of their offensive line. No disrespect to anybody else, but he is the best player on their offensive line. And they have aspirations this year. It's not just to play 16 games and, you know, usher in their new era in Las Vegas. They've got designs on playing further this year. And they need all hands on deck. And that's what's so frustrating, is because they know that they could be so much better with him than without him. And, you know, so he needs to figure out a way to fight through it.
And most likely, even if he's banged up still, he's not going to be officially ruled out till at least Friday, probably not even till the weekend.
You would think. But, you know, and the fact that he didn't, that the MRI came away clean, leads you to think that, you know, whatever the case is, they're not going to let it out, you know, immediately, unless he is going to play and he's fine. You know, they'll celebrate that. But, you know, if there's any question, yeah, I don't think that you're going to get an announcement until probably game time. You usually do that. The guys, you know, you take it right to the warm-ups, early outs, make them run, do some drills, and then with the trainers out there, and they determine whether or not you're going to be able to be good to go or not.
Well, and Vinny Bonsignore is our guest here. You can catch his show coming up at 4 o'clock with his partner, Lincoln Kennedy. Don't want to miss that. Yesterday, like we did today, you talked about the Michael Thomas injury, the news of that. The Saints have plenty of other weapons, and we talked about Jared Cook. With Jared Cook there and what he means to Drew Brees and that offense, and the fact that you've covered Corey Littleton for years, this could be a big game for Corey, right? I mean, to come out Monday Night Football, he's going to have some big tasks ahead of him, and they're going to need that core to step up.
Yeah, and I don't care what anybody says. Losing Michael Thomas, though, is
huge.
That's big.
Yeah, that's really big. But yeah, Corey, if the game plan goes into Jared's, you know, his direction, then your linebackers become really important, and your safeties as well, as far as dealing with that. And Jared played for the Rams, and it was uncanny how he left the Rams and, you know, blossomed. And it was frustrating for Ram fans because they always felt like he could play. I have an inkling that he was being held back by that offensive system and Jeff Fisher and all of that, because once he went to a real offense, all of a sudden he could play. Yeah. So, and the talent was always there. So he is a formidable task. But if that's all you have to deal with, if you don't have to deal with Michael Thomas and just be able to focus on Jared Cook, it just makes life that much easier rather than having to deal with both of them. Which goes without saying.
Right, but then have Emmanuel Sanders, you have Kamara, you have Latavius Murray, you have Taysom Hill, who Scott doesn't think is a very good player or is a real deal player. I think he's a weapon for Sean Payton, not for everybody, but for Sean Payton.
Yeah.
But they still have a lot of weapons, Vinny. That's my point.
Yeah, of course they do. And you've got the master in Drew Brees kind of orchestrating the whole thing. Right. I look at Drew, and there's limitations there now. There's obvious limitations. I started seeing that a couple of years ago. A lot of people have. There's ways that you can combat him. There's ways that you can get after him now that can give him a lot of trouble. And it's not just getting him to the ground. That's the ultimate goal. But he's a guy that if you get in his face, if you, you know, push him around off of his spots and just off rhythm, you can get after him. The key that what he does that's so frustrating is he gets rid of the ball so quick. And I think I mentioned talking to Aaron Donald and Michael Brockers and the Rams defensive line, how frustrating it is to get that close to him. And then all of a sudden the ball is out
and
over and over, and all these little, you know, short yardage passes that go for long yards after the catch. And you know that you're right on it. You're right on him, but he's so smart that he's able to, get the ball away quickly. But the way the Rams beat them was they got after him. And the classic interception by John Johnson, where Dante Fowler just got enough of him to be able to put the ball up in the air, and it fell right into John Johnson's hand. And in that game, that's what they did. They roughed him up. They made life difficult. They didn't sack him a lot, but again, you just got
pressure.
Yeah, and he's not the biggest guy. So if you can get into his windows, his eye windows, which, you know, the defensive linemen are just going to be so much bigger than he is, that makes him have to look around you and over you and all of that. And again, it's all those little things, but there is a susceptibility there that you can exploit.
And Vinny, before we get to the end of the show, one thing, and I'm still angry because the NFL Game Pass, the coaches' films aren't up yet, so I still can't break down film
yet. The little things in life.
It is. But, you know, I really wanted to focus on that interior line, defensive line for the Raiders, because Malik Collins, Mo Hurst had a couple pressures and a half a sack. But what did you see there at the game? What was the issue there? Because those, to me, to your point that you just made, those guys are going to have to make that push up the middle.
Yeah. And I think that was the burst was missing early on. You know, we talked about the cadence. Teddy Bridgewater was doing some clever things with the cadence, which if you're, you know, if you're not getting off the line of scrimmage comfortably, if you're just hesitating just that one because you don't want to jump offside, so you're sizing up the cadence, it's going to – that's a major difference. It makes a major difference. And I thought that was an issue early on. I thought conditioning was an issue early on. Lincoln Kennedy will talk about it. I don't care how much you train. Going out there and playing like an 8-play drive as a defensive or offensive lineman for the first time, huge. It's going to take a lot out of you, and you have to adjust back to that and get back into that kind of shape. So I thought there was a little bit of that. But as the game went on, I thought the push became a little bit stronger, and they played better as a result. But they needed to do that from early on.
Yeah, that push on that fourth down, especially.
From the get-go.
All right, Vinny, well, have a great show, my man.
Thank you. Deuce McAllister's coming on.
Deuce.
The Deuce. Nice.
All right, nice. Deuce McAllister coming up next with Vinny on In the Huddle along with Lincoln Kennedy. Q, we'll be right back at it tomorrow, my friend.
Absolutely. Vinny, have a great show.
All right,
Scott, I'll holler at you.
Thanks a lot, man.
Okay, for Vinny, for Q, I am Scott Kilbranson. We will see you tomorrow here, or at least you'll hear us here, on the Silver and Black Today, only on Raider Nation Radio.